Thank you all for coming. I'm Samantha Saunders. I am a CDC CSTE Applied Epidemiology Fellow at the Minnesota Department of Health, and I'm going to talk about a salmonella outbreak that we had among employees at a turkey hatchery. So before I begin, I'd just like to say that I have nothing to disclose. So our investigation begins in October of 2014. So on October 21st of 2014, salmonella 4512I- case was interviewed by MDH staff. And this person indicated during their interview that he worked at a turkey hatchery before his illness onset. During this interview, he also indicated that there were 8 or 9 other employees that were sick with salmonella-like symptoms around the same time that he was ill. So at this time, MDH initiated an investigation. On October 22nd, this case's pattern was identified as CDC pattern JPXX01.1314 by pulse field gel electrophoresis, or PFGE. On October 23rd, a second case with a matching PFG pattern was identified. And this case actually had an illness onset before our index case, but he didn't indicate any other ill employees at this time, so we didn't start an investigation when he came through surveillance. On October 24th, a third case with a matching PFG pattern was identified through routine surveillance, who also reported working at the hatchery. I guess that's kind of an important point to say. So this particular hatchery is the largest pulp producer in Minnesota. They hatch 4 days a week, and every work day they hatch 80,000 poults highly pathogenic avian influenza. This particular hatchery has 53 employees, 29 of which are employed by the turkey producer, 16 are employed by an outside temporary employment agency, and 8 are contractors that are employed to sex turkey poults. So just a little bit more about this salmonella pattern. It's a fairly common pattern in Minnesota with 8 to 10 sporadic cases occurring each year, usually relating to pork consumption or preparation or swine contact. It's strongly associated with live animal markets and sale barns, and we actually had an outbreak in 2011 in Minnesota that had 26 cases, 14 of which reported live animal market exposure. And then in November of 2014, there was a national outbreak with this pattern that focused on livestock from non-commercial sources. To my knowledge, there have been no previous outbreaks associated with this pattern that have been associated with live turkeys or turkey products. So this pattern is likely spread through many routes, including rodents and birds, and it has experienced clonal expansion in the past few years, which means that it's found in numerous animal species nationwide and is not associated with one particular type of animal. And this has previously been seen with salmonella type Amerium DT104 and multi-drug resistant salmonella Newport. So for our investigation, we used a case control study design. And a case was an employee of the hatchery who met one of the three following criteria. They had a laboratory-confirmed infection with the salmonella outbreak strain, or reported diarrhea and fever, or reported diarrhea lasting 3 or more days. And then a control definition was an employee who didn't report any illness. So on our outbreak questionnaire, we asked about length of employment, job tasks, availability and usage of personal protective equipment, or PPE, zoonotic disease and PPE training, hand washing and hand sanitizer usage, and then illness history and symptom history. And I just wanted to highlight a couple of the job task definitions for those of you who don't work with turkeys or turkey hatcheries. So sexing is when you determine the sex of the turkey poults. Pulling the hatch is when the hatching poults are removed from the incubators and then the shells are removed from the birds. And then egg setting is when eggs are placed from boxes underneath heat lamps to hatch. So PFG subtyping is routinely performed on all salmonella case isolates, and it was performed on the case isolates from this outbreak as well. And we sent out stool kits to interviewees who met our case definition. And then we calculated odds ratios with 95% confidence intervals for our binomial variables, and then continuous variables were analyzed using t-tests, and a p-value of less than 0.05 was considered statistically significant. So this flowchart shows our study inclusion. We started with that pool of 53 employees, 9 of which were immediately lost to follow-up because we had no contact information available for them. We interviewed 44 employees, or 83% of that 53. and 43, or 97%, were included in analyses. And the one person that was excluded from our analyses reported illness but did not meet the case definition. So we had 12 people who met our case definition, and their median duration of illness was 7 days with a range of 4 to 14 days. And 3 individuals were still ill with diarrhea at the time of illness, and their minimum duration of illness was 10 days. All cases reported experiencing diarrhea with a median of 7 days. All experienced abdominal cramping. 10 or 83% reported fever. 6 or 50% reported bloody stools, and then 4 or 33% reported vomiting. So as I said before, we identified 3 of our cases through routine disease surveillance, and we sent out stool kits to an additional 8 employees who met our case definition. Of that 8, we received 4 stool samples back, and one of those samples was positive for the outbreak strain of Salmonella. The other 3 samples were negative for all Salmonella species. So this epi curve just shows the length of this outbreak, which is kind of alarming. So the cases illness onsets go from July 31st through October 14th of 2014. And then this table shows job tasks related to illness in univariate and multivariate analyses. So in univariate analyses, both egg setting and pulling the hatch were both statistically associated with illness. However, in the multivariate model, only pulling the hatch was statistically associated with illness, with cases were 7 times more likely to have reported pulling the hatch as compared to controls. And interestingly enough, we found that pulled sexing was inversely associated with illness, with no cases having reported sexing the birds, and 10 of 31 controls having sexed the birds. We had an odds ratio of 0.08 and a p-value of 0.02. And then this table shows our continuous variables that we analyzed, and our cases tended to be younger than controls, with a mean of 35.5 years old for cases and 44.8 for controls. And then cases also had worked less time at the hatchery compared to controls, with controls having worked an average of 4 years longer than cases. And then we also ran multivariate models by job task adjusting for employment length, and we found also that pulling the hatch was statistically associated with illness. We found no other significant associations between overall illness and reported usage of PPE, hand washing and hand sanitizer practices, or zoonotic disease or PPE training. So pulling the hatch was associated with illness in both univariate and multivariate analyses and was also related to length of employment. And chick sexing was inversely associated with illness. So there may have been some PPE or training differences between chick sexers or other employee types that we weren't able to capture in our interview. And then we also, as I said before, illness was also associated with recent employment, which is a risk factor for enteric illness. And we expect to see sporadic cases of Salmonella with animal contact that show up periodically in our surveillance system, especially among new or young workers, as this indicates a lack of immunity to pathogens. So because we saw no overall differences in PPE, hand washing practices, or hand sanitizer usage among cases and controls, this suggests that there was environmental contamination at the hatchery. And because the pulling the hatch was statistically associated with illness, that suggests that the newly hatched poults were an important source of infection. So while we were conducting our investigation, the hatchery decided that they also wanted to do their own investigation at the same time. So these are just some of what they found, what was going on at their hatchery at the time of the outbreak. So one, they found that PPE was not required before the outbreak, so it was strongly encouraged and available, but not everyone used it, especially for those high-risk tasks such as high-pressure washing, where it can aerosolize the fecal particles. And due to communication issues, disinfectant was actually being improperly mixed, so it was being double diluted, so 2 employees were actually going through and diluting it, and so it was at half strength. There weren't enough sinks on the premises, So there was always a long line for sinks. This is anecdotal, but there was a long line for sinks, so people would just get kind of fed up and like, oh, I'll just go eat lunch without washing my hands. And then pulp box pads, or those liners, were being returned to the hatchery from the farms that they came to. And I included a picture because I actually wasn't sure what they looked like before I started this investigation. And so they'd come back with all of those dried feces on them, and then the hatchery employees would have to take those out before returning them, relining them, excuse me. So because of this outbreak and because of the investigation that the hatchery did themselves, we were able to make a number of biosecurity improvements for the hatchery. So thankfully now the disinfectant, they tell us anyway, is being mixed correctly. They are receiving periodic hand washing training, all employees, regardless of their of how they're being employed, whether or not they're a contractor or they're employed by the hatchery. Two new sinks with foot pedals were installed just outside the break room. They've limited their use of high pressure washing to just a couple employees. And now they're actually requiring those people who are high pressure washing to wear PPE. And they're requiring that those pulp pads are no longer returned to the hatchery from the farms. And best of all, they're sanitizing and cleaning all of their bathrooms and the break room on weekends. So we did have some limitations in our investigation. So one of those being that the job task question on the interview was left intentionally open-ended. I'm not a vet, so I don't know a whole lot about what goes on at a turkey hatchery. So I thought that I could get more information if I left it open-ended. However, there might have been some tasks that we did not capture during this question or in this question. We did have a low number of cases and controls, which may have not provided adequate power to see some associations. And then we also didn't specifically ask about smoking or chewing habits at work. So in conclusion, this was an outbreak of Salmonella 4512 I- among employees at a Minnesota turkey hatchery. And as I said before, we expect to see sporadic cases of Salmonella among agricultural workers because those short-term workers or those new employees don't have an immunity to any of the pathogens. But those outbreaks generally indicate more serious issues within those establishments, such as environmental contamination or repeatedly ill animals. But this was really a win-win situation for both us and for the hatchery. Those human cases really served as indicators of problems within that they had in their hatchery protocols. But thanks to the collaboration between us and also the Board of Animal Health and the hatchery management, resulted in the end of that outbreak and an opportunity to update biosecurity protocols that they needed updating badly. So I'd just like to acknowledge that this study or report was supported in part by an appointment to the Applied Epidemiology Fellowship Program by CSTE and funded by CDC. And I'd like to thank my co-authors, Joni Sheftel, Kirk Smith, and Tori Witten, as well as the Foodborne and Zoonotic Disease Units at MDH. And then Dr. Lauer and Dr. Voss at the Board of Animal Health, as well as hatchery management and veterinarians.
Question about your these employees who were affecting the chicks.
Mm-hmm.
Did I remember correctly that they were contract employees versus so, and I don't know anything about turkey hatcheries, but could there have been biases there where they had a different sort of employment status or ethnic background, cultural issues that may have made them less likely to be reporting the disease to you?
That could have been. I didn't even take that into consideration. What I was looking at was that since they were employed by an outside agency, we weren't sure about what their PPE situation was, like if they were required to wear it by their employer. And a lot of them didn't speak English either, so that was definitely a limitation for our investigation as well. But that's a good.
Did most other employees speak English?
Yes. Yeah, it was really just the chick sexers that didn't speak English. So they're either Spanish speaking or Karen speaking. So.
I actually have a quick question.
Sure.
So is this something that you think is maybe a more general problem within the industry, and so that you're going to do some sort of outreach related to this, or do you think this was a a site-specific problem and it's been addressed and you'll move on with your life?
That's a good question. I mean, it could happen again at another hatchery. We don't know. I really just wanted to highlight that this was a really good partnership that we built, and we really couldn't have done it without the Board of Animal Health either. I think that they had the perfect storm of events going on. They had those box liners coming back and those communication issues, which resulted in the disinfectant not being strong enough. I think that those might be unique to that hatchery, but I mean, an outbreak that could definitely occur at another hatchery. And I mean, they've kind of got their own problems right now, so other problems.
Well, and you did illustrate that collaboration very nicely, mm-hmm. and that is something I think that we're all recognizing as increasingly important.
Yes, definitely.
All right. Thank you very much.